Time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. It's a discussion segment about things happening on and in the media. And in a world of personalized media, there's always lots to talk about. We do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here by phone, Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Andrew, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Precious, welcome back after your maternity leave.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you both. This month, coronavirus cast a shadow on all media creation and consumption. Let's start with news media and virus generally. And just this morning, I was made aware of a Pew poll from about a week ago that indicates that about 70% of Americans think that the news media are covering the virus well or somewhat well, but there's also about 62% of the people polled who believe that the media have exaggerated the risks, at least to some degree. I wonder what your thoughts have been about what you've been seeing about the way news media have handled coverage.
Well, I think the challenge is that no one knows about coronavirus as in a historical way, because it's never happened before to people. So it's something new and something that we're always finding more about. Plus, it has mutated. And then also, it's something that we saw it go from country to country in different areas. So in that way, the media is using the different types of media are using the information that they're receiving, but the information is coming so quickly. And also, we're seeing people react really quickly to it, too. So we've had different types of viruses come around throughout history, but since this is a type of new crown of viruses altogether, that it's something that people are kind of acting as it's happening, which is the challenge of it.
Indeed. Andrew?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we have a situation here where, you know, some places in the country, like New York or Seattle, have been just devastated by what's happening. And then other, you know, a lot of the country are small towns and places that haven't really been hit or exposed to it yet. And so I think for, you know, certainly for a lot of Americans, it seems like, oh, what's the big deal? Because it hasn't impacted their lives, except that maybe they're being told to shelter at home, although in many states that's not even happening. So I think it's easy for us as Americans, if your life is somewhat sort of operating as normal, or if it's only minor inconveniences or even substantial economic inconveniences, but you're not actually seeing any health consequence yet, it can feel like, okay, this is just an isolated thing. But I think it's also a long virus and a virus that can take time to show up. And we're also so far behind other countries in the testing that I think that many of the folks saying now that this is being overcovered in a couple weeks are going to see you know, just how big an issue it is.
Excellent point, because I was noticing that the dates of the poll were actually March 10th through 16th, and so much has changed
right.
in the 10 days since the 16th that I, you know, with so many places going into further lockdown and the rise in the number of cases just mushrooming in places like New York, I think maybe the people who responded to that poll on those dates might feel very differently even now.
Yeah, it's like it's sort of like the speed of light. I was explaining to my daughter at bedtime the other day that, you know, how stars, when we look at stars, we're seeing the light from years ago. And her mind was blown. And that's kind of what's happening with all the data about coronavirus, right? Is that we're, you know, every new bit of information we get today is actually the information from a week or two ago. So we're already out of date on the latest information, and it, which is the scary part.
Wow, you're a good dad. That's a good story. I'm glad you told me that. Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange with Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi. Let's move on to media and Donald Trump. I mean, and how are the media supposed to handle a president who consistently gives misleading or wrong information? And the answer in some cases is to just cut away from him. I know at least there was a discussion in public radio a couple of days ago about this. And finally, KUOW in Seattle put out this message. After airing the White House briefings live for 2 weeks, a pattern of false information and exaggeration increasingly had many at KUOW questioning whether these briefings were in the best service of our mission to create and serve a more informed public. Of even greater concern was the potential impact of false information on the health and safety of our community. Of course, Seattle, these concerns are going to be heightened a bit because Seattle's been the epicenter, or at least the first place where things began to mushroom here. So it's interesting to get in this situation, though, where it's like, well, do we not cover the president because what he's saying is just flat wrong?
Yeah, I think it could be really dangerous, the way that he's giving misinformation. Through this whole type of COVID-19, I've really have tried to read various articles and turn to like the medical experts and more like sociologists as well, more so than the president, just because what he's saying a lot of times, it's hard to trust him and feel that he is giving accurate information. And even before this week and last week, I was living in Seattle with my family because my husband works there, and we came back to Ashland before March, because the feeling there in Seattle during February was so much more intense than it is here in Ashland, Oregon. And so we felt we kind of just needed to get out because it was so, you feel like you couldn't do anything. And that was like weeks ago. So mm-hmm. I could see how in Seattle, it's a very, very serious feeling, and it's a lot more intense too.
Sure. Consider the audience. Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't remember the poll. I should have written it down, but I read a poll yesterday that showed like which sources people trust the most. And of course, not surprisingly, among Democrats, Trump is last. But actually, among Republicans, those polled said they trusted Trump more than any other source, including the CDC or medical experts. And it's a little troubling, right? Because we have a president who, for weeks, has given inaccurate information, misinformation, played down the seriousness of what's going on, and then now denies that he did that. You even see on the stage sometimes the medical experts sort of have to walk back in real time what he said, but they're very careful because obviously they don't want to sort of upset him. And so, you know, I think it's sort of frightening that we would all be better off, I think, if we were hearing only from medical experts and not from the president. I think another thing to keep in mind here is that, Trump early on was saying that he was not going to stop his rallies. And now he had to. And now he's basically figured out that he's getting to do a reality show, a live rally, a live streamed rally in prime time sometimes. And I think that's, dangerous for media outlets to simply broadcast that live when there's no real-time fact-checking, right? And so I do think that the media needs to be careful here. I mean, it seems to be newsworthy, right, that the president is speaking to the nation. That's newsworthy, so we should cover it. But when the misinformation is so dangerous, I think that maybe we have a responsibility to first fact-check what's being said and give it some context.
I think I have the poll you're talking about. It looks like it came out from CBS News 2 days ago, and 57% said they didn't trust the media's coverage of the pandemic, but 56% said they didn't trust the president either.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then I also want to bring in the whole idea about Fox News has been big on this. The president got into it for a while, but he says he won't anymore, calling it the Chinese virus. And then, Precious, you've observed back to me about seeing the social media hashtag Kung Flu, which apparently was also used within the White House.
Right. I think that, first of all, there's been a lot of violent incidents that have happened on Asian and Asian American individuals around the world. And a lot has happened also in New York City and different places in our country in the U.S. There's even a Facebook group that I'm part of that is documenting all of the different type of hate crimes against Asians and Asian Americans based upon COVID-19. And I just always try to, having seen our president as the way that he acts throughout time, I see that sometimes he distracts our audiences, saying derogatory things or saying outrageous things to pull our attention away from other issues that might be happening where he's moving that attention away. So it's definitely a very, very racist thing for him to say, but also it's a part of a larger problem of the different type of hate crimes and different type of violence that's happening to Asians and Asian Americans.
I'm looking at a Washington Post article called "Coronavirus is Inspiring Anti-Asian Racism. This is Our Political Awakening. What we need now is solidarity." That's obviously an opinion piece in the Washington Post, but there's lots of stuff out there as well. I do want to ask the audience as we continue through this Signals and Noise segment with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gata to tell us how you're getting information during the crisis and if you're seeking out a lot more of it. It seems like there's such an avalanche of information and yet so much to be found and the things we're still wondering about that I have to push myself away at about 8 o'clock at night and stop looking at news media. What's your experience? 800-838-3760 to join the discussion. And you can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Let's move away from news media and talk about social media, because it seems like there are lots of lines on social media of people coming to their store and finding the empty shelves where the toilet paper was. Long lines outside of stores as people wait to get in. Are we getting a slightly different view, Precious, of what might actually be happening in most communities?
I think it varies. I know that my mother, she just came up from Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and she was definitely experiencing that in Los Angeles. But I think that we see, so we have our news stations, and sometimes they cover some of the long lines and some of the photos that people have been sharing. But I really feel like those type of photos are being shared amongst our own personal networks, whether it's on the news or not. We're either texting it to each other or seeing it on Facebook. And so I feel that maybe even if it's not happening in your own neighborhood, that it might feel like it is happening when you see so many of those photos all on Facebook or all on whatever type of social media platform you use. You feel like that's happening everywhere. So it is happening, but it might not necessarily be in our own neighborhoods.
Right. Andrew, thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, what I'm seeing mostly in the social media, at least in my feeds, is more, you know, the coping mechanisms, right? That we're all so isolated and stir crazy that, you know, we're memeing the apocalypse.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I'm, you know, it's both, it goes back and forth between heartening and depressing, because we're all sharing the same like awful stories, but also interspliced between those are all these just really funny memes. And so there's kind of this odd, we're in this together thing that happens in the social media for the most part.
Does it help when you get a major figure communicate through social media, like Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson did, talking about the fact that they tested positive?
I feel like yes and no, because for some people, so Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, they were one of our big celebrities at first that we first saw get COVID-19, and they came out of it so far. You know, they've came out of it successfully and okay, but I feel that also, so it was good to see that, not good, it was interesting to see that it can affect anybody, but also I think that some people, it might give them the idea that they too will be fine in 2 weeks or a week, but really the reality is that we kind of don't know how the individual will react if they do get it, and they could die or they could go into a coma like one of our family friends, all of these different outcomes. So we're not all Tom Hanks and we're not all Rita Wilson. It's important to keep that in mind.
One of your family friends is in a coma, you're saying?
Yeah, one of our family friends who is, I think he's an elderly person. He's in a coma.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Andrew, you had some thoughts about the Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson?
No, Precious nailed it. I agree 100%.
Okay. Let's talk about the other things going on social media, though, too, because there's a lot of blossoming, it seems like, of homegrown video with you know, funny people out there on Instagram and TikTok and the other social media avenues, you know, posting videos of avoiding the virus, having video games with the virus, you name it.
Yeah, I think there's, again, I think people have been very creative. I just noticed that Oregon Film, the state film commission, is launching a Inspiration Oregon contest for 90-second videos, just to, you know, again, to get people creative. I think, you know, we're all, again, we're stuck in here, so talented people are finding ways to share and encourage and just lift people's spirits. We're also seeing people like, you know, Neil Diamond released a Sweet Caroline video where instead of hands touching hands, it's hands washing hands.
I love that.
There's a DJ named DJ D Nice who's been doing an ongoing Instagram party called Club Quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, you know, really big people like Oprah Winfrey are in on streaming this. And
Oprah and Michelle Obama got in the other day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I think it's, you know, the rare time when social media kind of shines as opposed to making everything worse. It has made opportunities for this kind of reaching out and connecting, entertaining one another, and comforting one another.
Well, it's interesting too, because the flip side of that is the fact that as social media has come up, professional media has come down. They're pretty much in the same place right now, because you look at the likes of the late night hosts, Stephen Colbert, for example, doing stuff from home. Samantha Bee doing stuff from her shed, as she pointed out. Trevor Noah came back this week with the social distancing daily show done from his apartment.
Yeah, I've also been really surprised to see how Ellen DeGeneres is doing her show. We're used to seeing her always kind of dancing and being real energetic. And then you on Instagram or IGTV, we see her in her home on her couch, laying down kind of on her couch in her loungewear. And she has what I feel is a completely different feeling, kind of bored and a bit somber, which is suitable for our times. But I found it kind of fascinating how the different personalities on television have adapted or have reached out through Instagram TV to still connect with audiences.
Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay are with us once again from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University for our monthly media overview. It's a little late this month. We're waiting for Precious to get back. So Signals and Noise is the segment. You're welcome to join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. So not a lot of new media getting produced other than stuff you can do on your phone at this point. But boy, considering all the things that we've waited years to binge watch, this is an excellent time, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Because you know, my area is film and television, and you know, the industry, like many industries right now, is just devastated, right? You know, we've had, you know, all the major film festivals have been canceled, theaters are shuttered. It's you know, we're going to have no new content for quite a while. But at the same time, we're all turning to content more than ever. And you know, I saw one of these memes that went out was like, you know, when this is all over, and people are telling you that, you know, that the arts don't matter, remember, who did you turn to during this crisis? And I see nothing but on my social media, all these people saying like, oh, what are you streaming? What binge recommendations? And so it is an interesting time, right, that we're turning content more than ever, and yet we don't have the ability to make new content. And a lot of decisions being made about, you know, where does the content that's already in the can go? So Universal Pictures decided to release their theatrical releases online, whereas Wonder Woman 1984 decided they're pushing back because the director said, no, this is made for the big screen. We're going to hold it off. So it's kind of interesting to see people make the calculus as to whether or not they're going to release things early. Disney released Frozen 2 early on their Disney Plus, you know, just give kids something to do. So a really interesting time for the industry.
Truly. And I want to bring in the fact now that because of the fact that the internet that allows us to stream all these things, we also get the chance to keep working through internet. Everybody's talking about, it seems like every segment we talk about Zoom, and we got an email from Mary in Ashland who says, and this relates to our earlier piece about seniors. She says, I'm 68 and live in Ashland. Cancellation of events and appointments has been a welcome change to my pre-COVID-19 frenetic pace of life. I enjoy staying at home. I'm getting a lot of projects done and have more time for reflection and meditation. I have Zoom meetings about twice a week with people and organizations I belong to. Talk about the issues you guys are coming up with as professors to try to teach your courses when SOU resumes.
Well, I know for me it's been particularly challenging because, you know, I teach in a film production program, so we don't have, you know, our students, one of the things that's a real selling point of our program is access to gear, being very hands-on, very interactive and in person. And so we've had to totally rethink what we're doing, and it's really, really challenging. And I'm also finding students already reaching out because a personal interaction is different than an on-screen interaction. And I have students who have serious anxiety about being on camera. Mm. And so they're already stressing out about even just having these Zoom class meetings. So I don't know. Precious probably has a little more experience with this kind of stuff than I do.
Before I came to Southern Oregon University, I used to be part of a technology group. And that technology group, they were always saying that online education is going to take over the face-to-face one. But I feel that also, I never fully felt that way because being able to be in a classroom and interact with people face-to-face is really important. And I find it very challenging to completely work from Zoom. You would think that it'd be a benefit as a parent and a parent with babies, but it's actually a lot harder because I still have to find a quiet place, mm-hmm. just like many of our students have to find a quiet place to hide away for an hour or 2 hours, or even 3 hours. It's really, really, it's so challenging. It almost feels like I can't find a quiet place in my house to give lectures through video chat or to interact unless I do get out of my house to remove myself from my children during that hour. So it's a solution, but I don't feel like it's the best or easiest solution yet.
All right. I was going to give you each a couple of seconds for a pick three, but we've come to the end of our time, so we're going to have to leave your media picks. But it's more like a pick six at this point, I would think, because there's so many things you could probably consume with all the stuff that's out there. I mean, we talk about all the hours and hours of television being made these days, and if you have a streaming service available to you, you can go back and catch the backup if you're stuck at home, which we don't make light of. This is a hard time for a lot of people. We recognize that, and it's one of the reasons that, of course, Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay from the communication faculty at SOU joined us on the phone this month. Thank you both for joining us once again for Signals and Noise.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks to Don and Eugene for telling us about 3-minute online hikes to help with stir craziness. I appreciate hearing from you, Don. Sorry I don't have time to take your call. That's it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange.